As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Thank you very much to the Gentlemen's Expo for inviting me back this year. I'll be interviewing George St. Pierre on stage at the Gentlemen's Expo. If you want more information, make sure you check out gentlemensexpo.com as well as their Twitter, at the Gentlemen's Expo, their Instagram, at Gentlemen's Expo, and of course, George St. Pierre, at George St. Pierre. We'll get to the bottom of a lot of things. We're actually going to hear from George St. Pierre a little bit later on in the show. He joined Chael Sonnen on Chael Sonnen's new podcast. You're welcome. It's on Podcast One, a fantastic podcast this week by Chael Sonnen. I'll give you some excerpts on there. Really think you should check it out because Chael asks some pretty good questions whenever he has his guests, but we'll get to that momentarily. We're also going to hear from Miles the Fury Jury. It's official. He is taking on Cowboy Cerrone, something we spoke about a few weeks ago when Miles joined us and when he was in town doing some seminars over at Fitness Kickboxing Canada with the infamous Ross O'Donnell, one of the best guys in this industry. We're also going to hear from Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping from this week's conference call with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. As you can just imagine, Michael Bisping did go off and Luke and him did go back and forth on a few different topics. We'll get to that. I'll play some clips on that and try and break that down for you. But like I said, Miles Jury, George St. Pierre, Chael Sonnen, Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisping, and we're also going to hear later on from James Lynch, a journalist from Sportsnet.ca, to talk about the biggest headlines and some of the different topics from the world of mixed martial arts. All right, waiting on the line right now. Let's not waste any more time because he's got a busy schedule. He is training for a huge fight, a co-main event fight versus Donald Cowboy Cerrone. We're joined right now by Miles Jury. Mr. Jury, how are you today?
Doing good.
Well, you were traveling all over the place the last time you and I spoke when you were up in Canada. I missed you. Our dates and our times got crossed. You were over with Ross O'Donnell at Fitness Kickboxing Canada. But there were so many things that were on your agenda before this whole Donald Cerrone fight. What was going on there?
I was just busy. I was doing like some seminars and just promoting Jury Jiu-Jitsu and traveling around and teaching some good stuff and doing that and then mixing that in with getting a chance to like, head back home to Michigan and visit my family a little bit for after the fight. And so I was busy over the last couple of weeks.
What was the reaction meeting with people, especially family, of course, when you take out a guy in your last fight like Takanori Gomi, first time a guy's ever been knocked out like that? What was the reaction and feedback you got from some of the people that you encountered afterwards?
They were excited. You know, a lot of people were just happy and just kind of, a lot of people were just, the energy was good, I guess you could say. You know, they were excited and they were proud and some people were even impressed. They did different mixtures, but everything was really supportive and everybody was really happy, for getting the win.
And of course, getting a victory like that now lands you on the opposite side of the octagon of a guy like Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who's been on an impressive win streak as well. You're undefeated. I think he's won his last four or five. I mean, this is a stellar bout. It's the co-main event now. There were talks that it was supposed to happen in Boston, and now it's been moved over to the pay-per-view. Where was all that confusion coming from? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I always wait till the UFC sends over the contract before we say anything official. There's been talk about me fighting Cowboy for the last couple of weeks now, and pretty much we've just been waiting to lock down a for sure date. And like you said, I mean, everybody was kind of saying, and we all thought on this side that maybe it was going to be in Boston. And then, sure enough, just when you think you know what's going on, UFC, they're like, hey, nope, UFC 178, January 3rd. Or sorry, UFC 182. Sorry.
See, exactly. It's confusing everybody as well as yourself. Now, are you sort of happier that you're the co-main event of a pay-per-view, or would you rather have been on television, or does it really make a difference to you?
Honestly, I like fighting on pay-per-views. I feel like it's best for your career. It's best for everything, And, I'm honored to be a co-main event. This is my first time being co-main on a pay-per-view. And, I'm coming from, the Hooters since a kid watching, fights in Hooters and Buffalo Wild Wings and now I get a chance to be on the co-main event with Donald Cerrone. So it's kind of, my career's come full circle and I'm excited though. It's an honor and I can't wait to make the most out of the opportunity.
From your perspective, I mean, Donald has been saying a few things in and out of social media, saying this fight should have happened a while ago. I think you didn't want to accept it. Now you've accepted it. He's glad that it's on. You're glad that it's on. For people that don't know the story, what is the actual story between you two?
The actual story between me and Cerrone is, I mean, honestly, I've never even met the guy. I don't even know the guy. I feel like it was early in my career, UFC offered him, but it was like literally it was on like, you know, Donald Cerrone terms where it was a couple of weeks notice or whatever, and I just wasn't prepared. There's absolutely no way I could have taken the fight. So I don't know if he's talking about that. But I mean, besides that, I mean, I haven't heard any discussion about Donald Cerrone my whole career. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. But you know, I don't know, maybe he just got it out for me. Maybe he's, you know, he wants to fight me or something. But I mean, either way, I mean, he hasn't really been in my crosshairs my whole career. So it's just, I don't know what he's talking about with, you know, supposed to fight me and all this stuff and that it should have happened a while ago. I feel like, you know, I think if anything, this is the perfect time for this fight to happen. So I don't know what he's talking about.
Is there any bad blood between you two, you think?
No, I honestly, it's nothing personal to me, man. I feel like it's just business. I'm trying to get that world title ASAP. And, you know, that's it. You know, I don't really care if it's Donald Cerrone or whoever they're put in front of me. You know, whoever's got that belt or whoever's in my way to get that belt, that's all that matters to me. I honestly could care less about Donald Cerrone or who else. You know, there's always going to be another opponent. There's always going to be, you know, a bunch of guys out there to fight. So it is what it is. I won't, it's pretty much like this. I'm gonna fight Donald Cerrone, and I won't even think about him ever again. So I'm moving towards that belt, and that's all that matters.
We're in conversation right now with Miles Jury. Make sure you follow him online via social media, at Fury Jury. You will never meet a more humble yet mean ass kicker in this game than Miles Jury. Just one of the nicest guys in the game, except when he steps into the cage. You can say that of a lot of guys, but I've known you over the years as being a gentleman. Now, when I look at this fight versus Cowboy Cerrone, obviously a lot of people know who Donald is. People are beginning to understand who Miles Jury is right now. How do you, as a third person, and you have to break down this fight, how do you stack up versus Cowboy?
I feel like I stack up very well against Cowboy. I feel like he's never fought somebody like me. Somebody that, you know, is as versatile and who can mix it up like me. And I feel like I'm younger. You know, I feel like I'm 20, about to be 26. I feel like this is a young man's game. I feel like, you know, Cerrone's already gotten the opportunity that I'm getting now, and I feel like he's already gotten it more than one occasion. And, you know, the guy's been around the sport for a while, and, you know, he's proven time and time again that he's, you know, he's a contender, but, you know, I feel like I match up well. I feel like the path that I'm on and the system that I'm on and everything that I'm geared towards is getting that world title. So, you know, I feel like it's a perfect fight for this time of my career, and I'm just excited about it.
I was asked the question yesterday when the fight finally became official, or sort of, you know, we knew it was coming over the past few days, and I was asked my opinion, what do you think of the matchup? And I said, look, I've seen Donald train in the octagon over at Jackson's MMA, and the guy is an absolutely majestic Thai fighter. He hits the pads beautifully. He can execute in the octagon. I said, but then you got Miles Jury, who people don't understand. His striking is so underrated, and he's very patient, especially in that Diego Sanchez fight. We also saw it in the Takanori Gomi fight. When the execution is there, you unload very, very quickly. I like the fight, but on the surface level, I'm wondering, do you think Donald's going to be very aggressive and you're going to be competing more in a counterfighting stance, or is it a situation where, listen, wherever it goes, it's going to go?
You know me, I don't really like to give too much, you know, information on what I'm doing, but I mean, realistically, it could go either way. You know, I really, I'm just focusing on what I plan on doing. And I plan on coming in there and being, you know, the best Miles Jury ever, and that's pretty much what I'm working on right now. I'm working on getting better before, you know, the camp actually starts. I'm working on getting better at different tools, my wrestling, my striking, everything. And, you know, by the time the fight's here, me and my team will have already had a game plan, and we'll just be looking to go out there and work hard for, you know, 15 minutes and, you know, look to get that W.
Did you make any sort of any thoughts on the recent picture that was posted with Donald Cerrone, with Chael Sonnen, and everybody wearing the gis, and everyone's in their black belts or brown belts, and knowing that he's fighting you, a black belt in jiu-jitsu? Do you think there was anything to that?
What happened? It was Chael Sonnen and Cerrone, they posted a picture.
Yeah, there was a picture online. Yeah, Donald actually was in Oregon, and he got to train with a bunch of guys, really good jiu-jitsu fighters, the whole camp there. But the picture was posted, him in a gi and his belt on, and I thought, this is sort of strange. I wonder if it was taken before the fight was announced, after. So I was trying to figure out exactly what was going on. But I thought if you saw it, if you had any comment regarding that.
Nope. No, I guess he's training gi or whatever, but I mean, that's, you know, no surprise. I feel like Cerrone's, everybody knows he's got a solid ground game. So yeah, it's cool.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned a couple times you want that world title. You want that championship fight. With a victory over Cerrone, you mentioned it in your post-fight interview with Takanori Gomi. Can they deny you, if you defeat Donald Cerrone, that you should get a title shot?
I feel like they can. I feel like everybody that fought Cerrone and that's gotten a win over Cerrone has gotten the title shot after, you know, whether it's, you know, Pettis, whether you're going back to the WEC days, you know, Henderson. I feel like there's just a lot of opportunity that comes after beating the Donald Cerrone, and I feel like I'm no different. You know, I feel like the UFC, with a win over Donald Cerrone, I feel like that puts me up number one contender and gets me the next crack at that title shot, and that's what I want. So, I feel like, you know, fighting Cerrone, that's moving me really, really close to that title, and I'm excited for it. I feel like it's a long time coming.
Well, you did tell me when we were off the call that you're already training, you're already getting ready to go, so we want to let you go. Before we let you go, though, one final question. If you had a perfect Hollywood script fight versus Donald Cerrone, the one that's going to have the majority of people, except all those haters, but the majority of people out there saying, yes, this guy deserves a title shot based on this type of victory, what type of win would it be?
I'd be a finish in the first round.
There you go.
Yeah,
listen.
Would. I mean,
you know, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, finish in the first round. That'd be beautiful.
Well, two guys I respect very, very much for what you guys do in the octagon and outside. You guys are both great gentlemen. I cannot wait for this fight to go down. Miles, I want to wish you the best of luck and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Awesome, sounds good, Joe. Appreciate it.
There you have it. Miles, the Fury Jury. All right, let's move forward to what's going down next weekend in Sydney, Australia, as Michael Bisping will take on Luke Rockhold in the main event. This bout was put together a while ago, and it all stems from a sparring session that Luke Rockhold is just looking forward to ending what Michael Bisping has been saying, or what he did say, although Michael did apologize. He just wants to end this once and for all inside the octagon, and let's just say he's very motivated.
It's definitely a bonus. Shut his mouth and set the record straight on that note. He's just a guy I really haven't respected a lot of the way he carries himself around the sport. I've been around for a while, and I hear a lot of things and I see a lot of things, and you know, I really don't care for the guy. I'm looking forward to shutting him up for myself and a lot of people.
And then shortly thereafter, there was a shot at Michael Bisping's character, and you know, Michael's not going to take that, but Luke did throw a first shot out there, and yes, Michael responded.
He just seems to not be a nice, genuine guy to most people. I mean, he only like carries himself to is nice to people. Seems like to further himself and people who are going to help him. You know, I mean, I haven't really heard a lot of bad things about him. Just not being nice to the average Joe, really. I mean, you got to treat people the way you want to be treated, it seems like he's a prick everywhere in life, so I don't know what he's not happy about.
Well, allow me to shed some light on that situation, because Luke, I'm not sure if he's aware of this. This is a f***ing conference call, so you're supposed to talk and try and be a little bit eloquent and get your side of the story over. Luke, I don't know you. I don't care for you. We haven't shared a single proper conversation, so you're basing your facts, or what you presume is facts, on absolute nothing, on fresh air. We have had one conversation of the sparring match in question that everybody talks about. You don't know me. You don't know me as a person, so kiss my ass, you lanky piece of. I'll see you in Australia, you. We'll put it all to bed then.
All right then. Well, Michael Bisping, if you listened to UFC Central a few weeks back, he talked about the incident afterwards, after he fought Kung Lee at a coffee shop, and both guys now share their side of the story. What went down in Macau?
Well, the morning after the fight, everyone's packing up, getting ready to go. I had my bags, and there's a little coffee shop on the way out from the elevators. I walked down to get some coffee, and it's kind of isolated little zone. And I'm starting to get a cup of coffee, and I looked over, and of course, Michael's sitting right there with his dad and his little friend.
So I'm trying to order this coffee, and this little guy is just staring at me and just blabbing, like running his mouth, like just trying to egg me on. And I'm like sitting there, I'm like trying to ignore the little guy, and it's completely unavoidable. I had to get my coffee and walk right by him as this little guy is just staring at me and like trying to talk to me, and like I had no choice but to butt in. So I basically, just like I said, I don't lie, I don't embellish how I do things. I turned, I put my hand in straight. I stood right in the middle of their conversation. I put my hand in. I was like, gentleman's bet. You know, I was like, I said, if I don't finish in the first round, you have my purse. And he's like, and then he immediately went on the backtrack saying, well, look here. I make this much. And now they're trying to throw us. I was like, I don't care. You want $100,000 on top of your paycheck. All you got to do is get out of the first round. From then on, he blew it all out of proportion, jumped up in my face, and tried to say, oh, I'm disrespectful, tried to turn it into a very disrespectful thing. And then I, you know, of course, stood my ground and snapped back at him. But, you know, it was very, you know, I put my hand out, gentleman's bet. That's how I offered it. I didn't get crazy. The little guy was on my case, and it was an unavoidable situation.
Okay, and allow me to just to clarify through the bullshit there. So he does admit that he walked off and challenged me to a bet when I was with my father. The guy that he's talking about in question doesn't say two words to anyone. He's one of the quietest human beings you will ever see. So he was that you could ever meet. And he's saying that this guy was staring at him, talking shit. Luke, you're a liar. You're an absolute liar. Nobody was looking at you. You came off, you interrupted. You showed a lack of class, and I'll punish you for it next week.
Well, there's much more on the conference call. You got to try and listen to it. If you get a chance, go online, just Google it. There's much more. But I'll leave you with one final note. The question was asked of Luke Rockhold. What is the difference between his fighting style and Michael Bisping's fighting style? And here's what he said. And, of course, Michael Bisping did interject.
The difference between me and Michael, our fighting skills, is the same difference between our beards. I'm just more of a man than him.
He can grow slightly better facial hair, so therefore he's a bigger man and he's going to win the fight. Good on you, Luke. Well done. You got more pubes on your face.
Well then, okay, well that fight's going down next weekend. I'm definitely looking forward to those two middleweights duke it out there. I'll talk more about this bout with James Lynch in the next segment, just to determine what happens to the winner of this fight and how it's all going to go down. But like I mentioned earlier on, I'll be at the Gentleman's Expo interviewing George St. Pierre on stage, but Chael Sonnen beat me to the punch, at least podcast-wise, as he got to speak with George St. Pierre, and he asked him the question that everybody and everyone wants to know about George St. Pierre. Here's Chael Sonnen on his podcast, You're Welcome. You can check out on Podcast One.
I've got a lot of questions for you. And first off, let's just start out with the retirement. I'm reading things online. It says George St. Pierre is back. And then there's always a little asterisk next to it. And it says in training. Is St. Pierre back or is he just back in the gym?
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. I always train. I started training when I was 7 years old. And I never stopped since training is part of my life. So it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean I'm going to be back or not. It's just that training, whether if I retire or not, or if I come back or not, I'm always going to be training. I like to feel in shape, you know, to feel good in my own skin. And for that, that's why I'm training.
Now, personally, I can attest to this when it comes to George St. Pierre. The guy loves to train. The guy loves to be active. But he's also a very good stickler when it comes to technique. He likes to learn one technique and drill it over and over and over again. He's also told me and a bunch of other guys that, look, when you're training your mixed martial arts or jiu-jitsu, pick one technique, learn it, and drill it. Muscle memory, nonstop, drill, 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 drill. Now, I also know George does have this side of him where he loves to compete. Now, does that mean he's going to come back? Who knows? We don't know. You just never know. But George is who he is. And remember when I had Faraz Ahabi here on the radio show, I asked him specifically, what happens when Johnny Hendricks takes on ruthless Robbie Lawler? What if Robbie Lawler wins? Will that entice George St. Pierre to come back? Then again, George has been gone for quite some time because of the surgery. Maybe he's been packing on weight. What if he decides to come back at 185 pounds? You just never know with George St. Pierre, whether he wants to come back, doesn't want to come back, what's going to motivate him. I think the UFC's got to put up some coin. And you know what? I'll even ask James Lynch this question a little later on. We'll discuss it a little bit more. But when it comes to Chael Sonnen on his podcast, remember, I spent time with Chael Sonnen in Tulsa, Oklahoma for Battlegrounds. We spoke about George St. Pierre, and Chael was very smart asking the question. You know, if you do come back, where is it going to be?
You know, I'm the bigger I ever been right now. I because of due to my rehab, I was not able to do like martial art training, so I did a lot of strength conditioning exercise mixed with a lot of gymnastics. So I gained a lot of muscle mass. I'm the heaviest I ever been in my life. I'm like 200 pounds right now.
Whoa!
I used to walk around 188, 190, and now I am 200 pounds. And but still, a 200 pounds, it's a welterweight. The guys now in my division are over 200 pounds. Sure. They walk around 200, more than 200 pounds. So even before when I used to compete, I was very small. I have a very large frame that make me look bigger because I have a long reach. But I'm not very heavy. I'm a small guy for the elite of my weight class, actually.
So that was a great question asked by Chael Sonnen in terms of George St. Pierre. Would he come back at 185 pounds instead of coming back at 170 pounds? But George kind of throws another curveball in there, which, by the way, George is a master of doing. He throws a curveball in there saying, look, the welterweights nowadays are 200 pounds plus. They cut down to 170 pounds. I'm not sure if you guys read the article that I posted on Sportsnet.ca based on my conversations with Andy Foster, the executive director for the California State Athletic Commission, as well as Big John McCarthy, in terms of the regulators putting in a suggestion to the Association of Boxing Commissions and perhaps getting some feedback from the Association of Ringside Physicians in terms of same-day weigh-ins, adding same-day weigh-ins, first doing hydrostatic testing to determine a fighter's gravity in terms of gravity in their urine and determining the minimum weight that they can cut down to, and then adding a second-day weigh-in. So you have the regular weigh-in, which is what we're used to, and then a second weigh-in to determine, listen, you cannot be 7% more of that minimum weight that you are allowed to cut down to, 12% for women, by the way. So that could be very interesting for a guy like George St. Pierre in terms of what weight class should he be at. It could be interesting for the whole UFC roster. Maybe you'll see champions moved around. Maybe Jose Aldo should not be at 145 pounds. Hayden Brown, when he was a champ, he should never have been at 135 pounds. Put these guys where they're supposed to be and then make it safer for these fighters. But George St. Pierre, like he said, has put on a little bit of weight. Does that mean he's coming back at 185 pounds? Does it mean he wants to come back at 170 pounds? Does it even mean he wants to come back at all? You got to check out the podcast with Chael Sonnen. It's called You're Welcome. It's on Podcast One. Check it out online, Podcast One, not the number one, O-N-E, podcast1.com. Look for Chael Sonnen. I think it's number one right now, but it's called You're Welcome. It's fantastic stuff by Chael. I highly recommend it. This conversation that he had with George St. Pierre. George also gives his thoughts on Nick Diaz taking on Anderson Silva, how he thinks Nick Diaz is making a mistake here. It should have been a catchweight fight. By the way, hint, hint, as you heard from me in the past, talking about George St. Pierre versus Anderson Silva, how I said if that fight goes to a catch weight of 178 pounds, you might have George St. Pierre enticed. You might get his ear, but there's George St. Pierre dropping a little bombshell right there. They also talk about aliens, unidentified flying objects. I know people are always laughing at George about that, but it is something that is there. Believe you me. Trust me, you want to listen to that. And he also offers some career advice to fellow fighters. Most specifically, they were talking about Jose Aldo Jr. and Chael Sonnen being very, very smart, talking about pay-per-views and threshold, how to get paid, using yourself as a brand. It is absolutely fantastic stuff. I highly recommend it. You've heard me talk about fighters in general, whether they're champions, whether they're guys coming up. We had Jim Ross on the show most recently talking about making some noise, understanding that you're a brand. George St. Pierre and Chael Sonnen do discuss it. Like I said, I will discuss this and much more with George St. Pierre at the Gentleman's Expo coming up in a couple of weeks. Just check out gentlemansexpo.com. Follow me on Twitter at Showdown Joe to get all the information. All right, coming up after the break, a conversation with James Lynch, a journalist for Sportsnet.ca. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Are you ready now?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Showdown Joe, on Facebook, at Showdown Joe, and, of course, on Instagram, at Showdown Joe. And special thanks to 40 Sons, at 40 Sons, for the anthem for UFC Central. The song is called Hurricane. Make sure you check it out on iTunes, as well as this show, UFC Central, on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe so you do not miss any future episodes, as well as past episodes, if you want to listen in to some of the interviews that we did. All right, one of the guys who's never been on the show, making his debut right now, is a guy I've known for a very long time, one of the good guys in the industry, James Lynch from Sportsnet.ca. Mr. Lynch, how are you today?
Fantastic, Joe. I appreciate it.
No problem. Now, listen, a lot of stuff to discuss in the world of mixed martial arts, but earlier in the show, we had a little bit of the conference call there with Michael Bisping and Luke Rockhold, and it's no real surprise with Michael Bisping whenever one of his fights comes up. It's never going to be a situation where he's going to have an opponent that's not going to sort of rile him up, or at least he's not going to try and sell that fight. But what do you make of this whole scenario between Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping?
You know what? Initially, when this fight was announced, I wasn't a fan of it just because I'm a firm believer that Luke Rockhold is the number one guy in that division outside of Chris Weidman, obviously. And I wasn't sold. But I got to be honest, you know, listening to the conference call yesterday, seeing Bisping kind of get in there and throw his verbal jabs and everything. And, you know, I think this might be the best thing for Luke Rockhold's career. You know, have a guy that's really going to bring the best out of him in terms of, you know, the verbal jabbing and getting people hyped up for the fight. And it's just nice to see that people are going to be interested in the bout, and that's usually what Michael Bisping delivers whenever he's fighting these opponents. So I like the fact that Luke does seem, you know, to really kind of take in a lot of what Bisping's saying and kind of firing stuff back himself. But I'm excited for this fight now. Michael Bisping and both guys have definitely really sold me on this one.
Now, you take a look at the stylistic matchup here. I think it favors Luke Rockhold simply for the fact that he's got range, he's a southpaw. But then again, Michael Bisping continues to prove so many of us pundits wrong with the way he fights. He always goes in there and proves, you know, that, listen, I can bang with anybody. And the situation is, it is Michael Bisping. He does have the skill set. When you break down this fight, what do you see?
Well, I don't see, you know, Bisping that much improved. I know he just, you know, made Kung Li his punching bag in his last fight. And, you know, he did a great job and definitely stopped him. And that's not an easy thing to do. But I just look at the fact he's facing a guy in Luke Rockhold who has better, if not the same type of wrestling that Tim Kennedy did. And Tim Kennedy was able to utilize that wrestling in his fight and completely dominate Michael Bisping. And then you add in the fact that Rockhold's got that knockout power, too. I mean, coming off that win over Tim Bosch, that is not easy to do to finish a guy like Tim Bosch. So as far as breaking it down, I just think that Bisping's going to be in a lot of trouble. If he can't outstrike Luke Rockhold, then I think that he's going to be in trouble with his wrestling. To begin, being at AKA, Luke Rockhold is, you know, training with some of the best guys.
In terms of a victory for each guy, what does a victory do? I mean, Bisping just simply cannot get that title shot because every time he gets close, he ends up losing that one final fight there. And then, of course, Luke Rockhold, he's already got a victory over Jacare. You know, he wants that rematch with Belfort, but Chris Weidman's now taking on Vitor Belfort. What does this mean for each guy in terms of a victory? Where do you think they end up?
If Rockhold wins this fight, I think you have to give him the title shot at this point. You know, I know he did lose to Vitor, you know, not that long ago, but the fact is, I just think he's head and shoulders above everyone else in his division. Not just with the fact that he's winning fights, but that he's winning them so impressively. I mean, he's finishing guys, he's making it look easy. I really feel like a win, even though, you know, Bisping might not be as ranked as high as some of the other guys in his division, I think that Rockhold definitely deserves the title shot. And if Bisping wins, if he's able to pull it off, because I really do believe if Bisping wins, this is a pretty big upset. I think that you have to give him a top opponent after this, but I don't think you can rush him into a title shot. Although, you know, we've seen with UFC when it comes to entertainment value and marketing that they like having a guy who's really going to sell a fight, and Bisping can definitely do that. But if I were the UFC, I would give Bisping another fight, even if he does pull off this upset against Luke Rockhold.
Well, speaking of selling fights, Conor McGregor has become a master at it right now. He's taken on Dennis Seaver, but there is talk that, you know what, this guy should be facing Jose Aldo next. Forget about the Seaver fight. How do you think this whole scenario is going to play out?
I mean, I was kind of joking about it on Twitter. You know, maybe we're going to see Dennis Seaver somehow mysteriously get injured before this bout. But I personally would have liked to have seen Conor get Jose Aldo next. Although I kind of think, maybe the thinking there is, you know, with the Boston card, give him another win. Obviously, the Irish fan base there in Boston is huge, so maybe they want to give him one more notch in his belt. And, you know, Seaver's not that great of a wrestler, and that's kind of been the criticism of Conor McGregor's opponents, is that he hasn't faced an elite wrestler like a Nick Lentz or a Chad Mendes or someone like that to really test him. I think, you know, I can understand where the UFC's coming from. The only thing I questioned was, why did they announce the Seaver fight right before the UFC 179 main event, you know, especially with the fact that they flew McGregor down to Brazil. A little bit odd that they didn't wait until after, you know, they made him part of the embedded series, everything else. They didn't really capitalize on McGregor being in Brazil, in my opinion. So I think that, you know, Conor fighting Stever is going to be an interesting fight, but the fight that everyone wants to see right now is Aldo and McGregor.
In conversation right now with James Lynch. Make sure you follow him online at Lynch on Sports via Twitter. He's an MMA journalist for Sportsnet and the co-host for Parting Shot MMA and Fit for Radio. Now, George St. Pierre did join Chael Sonnen on the podcast. One, the new thing that Chael Sonnen's got going on with his career, and it was a spectacular, unbelievable interview. I'm trying to get people to understand. You really need to pay attention to it. One of the things that they did touch on specifically is the business of MMA. Chael Sonnen talked about thresholds and talking about Jose Aldo and how George responded with, listen, this is a brand. You are a brand. You have to look at your name as a brand. In order to make some money, you make it on pay-per-view. Jose Aldo does have that in his claws where he probably gets a cut of pay-per-view, but Chael Sonnen said you have to meet a certain threshold first with the amount of pay-per-view numbers that are sold. So it got into that conversation of the importance of using yourself as a brand and understanding that you are a brand. As we move forward in mixed martial arts with guys like Anderson Silva coming back, Nick Diaz coming back, Conor McGregor gets it, Chael Sonnen got it, George got it. Where do you think the future of some of these fighters are going to end up in terms of, are they ever going to understand the importance of selling fights, or will it still be a situation where we're in that scenario, that stage, that chapter in mixed martial arts where guys just want to fight and let their speaking be done in the octagon?
Well, I think, you know, I don't imagine fighter pay is going to go up anything crazy in the next couple of years. So I think these fighters have to realize they need to make a living, you know, using their brand and utilizing their abilities and everything like that. You know, we're seeing a lot more social media platforms, you know, come out here and there and fighters being able to market themselves. And I think it's such an important aspect that fighters need to realize, you know, especially with the fact that once a career is done, you know, you want to still have a steady income coming in. So why not utilize that brand as much as you can? And I just think that a lot of fighters, I think, are going to start to tune in a bit more. Hey, listen, you don't have to have the, you know, boisterous personality of a Conor McGregor, but you can be someone who is making, you know, seminars and appearances and things like that that are really going to make you as a brand really strong. So I think that we will see more fighters, you know, buy into the system, because if they're seeing guys like Conor McGregor, you know, flying on jet planes with Dana White, I think maybe they're going to start realizing, hey, I could, you know, I should probably do that too.
Do you think a lot of guys are probably saying, wait a second, why is he getting this special treatment? You know, is there a jealousy factor in there? Because I've heard it from some of the guys, and, you know, and I sort of don't, I don't stop them in their tracks, but I'm like, look at what he's doing for the company. You work for a company. If you start making more money for the company's going to treat you a little bit different. That doesn't make it fair. It doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it right. I'm just saying, if you do more for the company that you work for, i.e., you know, you and I work for Sportsnet. If we do more for Sportsnet, we're probably going to get treated differently than other people. I mean, I get that, but do you think there's a sentiment out there with some of the guys that are like, hey, this isn't really fair right now?
Oh, absolutely. There's going to be jealousy no matter what. I mean, you're a fighter who's, you know, maybe been in the UFC for a while, and you see Conor McGregor, who hasn't even been in there that long, you know, going on jet planes and, like I said, being part of the embedded series on a card that he's not even part of. So, yeah, there's definitely going to be some jealousy. But at the same time, I've seen other fighters come out and say, yeah, Conor McGregor's doing it right. You know, all the power to him. I think they realize that, you know, in this day and age, you need to be accessible with the fans. You need to, you know, make a fight exciting. And, you know, I really feel like whoever, you know, McGregor matches up with next, it's going to be a fight that people are going to be interested in, because he does such a good job of selling himself. And I think, if anything, he's kind of the new example, you know, going forward as far as how to sell yourself, what to do now that Chael Sonnen has left the sport.
James, let's talk about The Ultimate Fighter. There's a couple of things that come to mind right now. Obviously, the current season airing on Sportsnet 360 is the ladies. A champion will be crowned. I personally like the season. Do I have some suggestions that I would put forth to Dana White and Craig Pilgeon in terms of exactly what I would recommend to make some changes? I like it, but there's obviously room for improvement, in my opinion. What do you make of this season airing right now on Sportsnet?
Yeah, you know what? I'm with you. I'm a glass type person. I really like this series. I think it's unique. I think it's different. You know, I think people are just tired of the series in general. I think, you know, if it was a different season with other, you know, implications put in place, I think people would still find a way to complain. But I'm enjoying it. I think it's a great way to showcase this new weight class. Up here in Canada, we've got a great fighter in Randa Markos, who it's been a pleasure to kind of watch. I know she hasn't been getting too much TV time, but at the very least, you know, there's someone from Canada we can root for. And I personally like it. But one thing I would suggest going forward, or something that would kind of get people interested is another comeback season. This is something that I talk about with all the time with my friends and other journalists who really want to see them go through another process and maybe tweak it a little bit. You know, maybe don't have them in a house, but have it as a tournament and, you know, follow them around and do like an embedded type series and get people kind of interested that way. Because the one thing about the Ultimate Fighter, Joe, that's really interesting and kind of really grabs people is the human side. You kind of see that these people have characters and personalities and things like that. And I think that's where the success of the Ultimate Fighter can come in. And I think at this point, they do need to switch something up just because, you know, you and me like it, but that doesn't mean that everyone else does.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. About 4 or 5 years ago when I was having a conversation with Dana White, I mentioned the human side, the importance of showing the emotion, get the viewer attached to a fighter or a couple of fighters, you know, it's similar to what the Contender did at day one, and they've been doing it moving forward with the Ultimate Fighter, but he stopped me in my tracks and said, how did the Contender do? And I said, well, yeah. I understand how the Contender did, but it did grasp people because it showed a family side, an emotional side. People became attached to the fighters. And I think we're starting to slowly see it in the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, if you watch an episode of the Ultimate Fighter, James, when are you the most attached? Not necessarily in the fight result, but when it starts getting emotional. For example, yesterday, Angela talking about how she was, you know, she was born addicted to heroin because her mom was a heroin addict. And you talk about this fighter losing this person in their life, and this person or this fighter was this. Like Chuck Liddell, as an example, back in the day, they know that he has a degree as an MBA as a business analyst, as an accountant. And his mom said, listen, you could be an accountant whenever you want. Go do this fighting thing. We hear that story all the time. I think that's a great avenue when you start showcasing where these people live, where they come from. You define them by region or by country, because patriotism is absolutely huge. Just look at Conor McGregor and George St. Pierre. I mean, there are avenues where you can improve the Ultimate Fighter. Like you said, maybe you do get them out of the house and you do something like Embedded.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Dana might have said that back then, but I'm sure he's not saying that now with the Embedded series, which has been a huge success. I personally love watching, even though some of them are only like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. But I think it's a great way to kind of see what these fighters are all about. And you know what, Joe, you're not going to get this in other sports. You don't really get the human side. I mean, I know HBO has like their Hard Knocks show and things like that where you kind of see the behind the scenes. But a lot of other sports don't really get you to see the athlete behind the scenes. And I think that's something that people want to see. They want to see like they're just regular people getting groceries and things like that. People want to be interested and want to relate to a certain degree to these guys. And, you know, remember the Donald Cerrone one they had for the two pay-per-views ago where, you know, he's wakeboarding and stuff. I think that's the type of stuff that people want to see, and I think that sells. And I really feel like if the UFC wanted to, you know, maybe add that type of element in an Ultimate Fighter where it's like an embedded type series, I really think it could be successful.
We're listening to UFC Central right now. On the line with us is James Lynch. Follow him online via social media at Lynch on Sports, MMA journalist from Sportsnet, and the co-host for Parting Shot MMA and Fit for Radio. Now, in Brazil, they've already announced that Anderson Silva and Mauricio Shogun Rua will be the coaches for the upcoming season. And the first thing people said online was, oh, cool, when are they fighting? Well, they're obviously not fighting. They do have a history together. They were part of the Shooterbox team way back in the day. They're technically friends, but this will be a friendly competition. Do you think that's a situation that will work in terms of what's happening in Brazil? Because I think it'll work. It's different in Brazil than it is in Canada or in the U.S. or in Australia or in England. They look at fighting in a different way. They want their national heroes to coach. I mean, your thoughts on that?
I like it. I don't have an issue with it, and I don't really want to see Anderson Silva and Shogun fight. I mean, they've been, like you mentioned, the Shootbox days. They've trained together. They've been friends for over 15 years, so I don't really see the need for either guy to fight each other, and I don't think the fight with them would really fit anywhere in the division either, so I don't really necessarily need to see them fight, but I think you can just have them as coaches and have it as a mutual respect thing. I mean, it doesn't always have to be this one coach hates the other coach. I think, you know, we're even seeing this season with Pettis and Melendez that it can be a good show just with the coaches being themselves and not necessarily focusing on the rivalry of the teams. I think it could still work. And you know what? Those are two guys, Anderson and Mauricio Shogun Rua, who are huge, huge stars in Brazil. And I think why not get them as coaches as opposed to two guys who maybe don't like each other, you know, putting them in there and trying to create some drama. I think this will work, and I think it'll be a huge success.
Now, one guy who's a star in mixed martial arts, specifically the Ultimate Fighting Championship, is Donald Cowboy Cerrone. We had his next opponent earlier on the show, Miles Jury, who's taking an excellent step up in competition with a huge risk versus reward ratio for him. If he emerges victorious versus Donald Cerrone, should Miles Jury get that title shot or at least be in that mix where, you know, he's one fight away at least?
Yeah, you know what? It's going to depend how he wins the fight because, Jury's often been criticized. Although, I know in his last fight he knocked out Gomi, but the fight before that, I know he had that decision against Diego Sanchez, and he was criticized heavily for that, kind of playing it safe and not necessarily going for the finish. But I think Miles Jury definitely deserves these. Undefeated. I know he did lose in The Ultimate Fighter, but in general in the UFC, he's passed every test that's been thrown his way. And I'm a big fan of this guy, and I think that if he can really go in there and upset Cowboy, who's on a roll right now, why not give him the title shot? I imagine that Cerrone is going to be the favorite heading into this fight, but you can't count out Miles Jury, especially being from Alliance. Those guys really know how to make a good game plan. I think if he wins impressively, I don't think he can deny Miles Jury, especially with the fact that he's undefeated.
I like the fact that Cerrone is often a bully in his fights, but if he gets bullied back is when he usually gets in big trouble. I wonder if Miles is his whole angle is going to be patient until I have to bully Donald Cerrone, but that could be dangerous because Donald has that ability to knock anybody out at any time.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, this is very, very, very true. Donald's dangerous anywhere he goes, and it seemed like all those issues that were kind of holding him back in those big fights, of course I'm referring to the losses to Lake Pettis, Nate Diaz, and Rafael Dos Anjos, it seemed like a lot of that was mental, and we saw in the Eddie Alvarez fight that he seemed to have fixed some of those issues that were causing him problems, and he dominated Eddie in that fight. He looked great. But yeah, going against Miles Jury, it's going to be interesting because no one's really made Jury look bad at this point in the UFC, and you wonder how Jury is going to come at Cerrone, but I'm just expecting a great fight. I think both these guys want this fight. There's been a little bit of back and forth on Twitter as well too, so it's going to be a fantastic matchup, and I think we need more contenders in the lightweight division.
Well, you mentioned Eddie Alvarez. He has a huge fight coming up against Benson Henderson on that Boston card. You talk about pressure for both of these guys. I mean, you cannot lose this fight, but there's only one guy that can win.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that Eddie took this fight. I figured that maybe they would give him a bit of a bounce back fight, because he did have to fight Cerrone. I don't believe it was on short notice, but it was pretty close anyway to getting that all taken care of and everything like that as far as the matchup was booked. But, that's a really tough fight for Eddie Alvarez. I know Benson Henderson coming off that very shocking knockout loss to Rafael Dos Anjos, but, Eddie Alvarez is a guy that I don't think really showed his best fight against Donald Cerrone. I think there's a better Eddie Alvarez out there, the one that obviously defeated Michael Chandler. I think that that's the Eddie Alvarez we're going to see in this Henderson fight. But I got to be honest, Joe, I don't have a pick right now in that fight. I think it's very competitive. And, like I said, Eddie Alvarez is a guy that definitely is not taking any easy path in the UFC, fighting a former champion.
What about Alexander Gustafsson and Rashad Evans? Do you think this fight will actually get put together?
We're going to have to wait and see what happens with Anthony Johnson and his legal proceedings and everything like that. I think that's kind of what's holding things up at this point. And, of course, Rashad's health, too. But I think it makes the most sense. There's such a drop-off in the light heavyweight division, after guys like, Gustafsson and Cormier and things like that. It's not really very clear as far as who deserves the next shot. I know Phil Davis won last week, but they've already fought and they actually trained together. So it's a bit of a sticky situation there. But I think it's the fight that's going to end up happening. I imagine Phil Davis is going to get Ryan Bader next. And I think that Rashad and Gustafsson makes the most sense, not only with name value, but just as far as where they rank in the division.
A UFC interim heavyweight champion will be crowned in Mexico City. It'll either be Fabricio Werdum or it'll be Mark Hunt. Look into that crystal ball at Lynch on Sports on Twitter. What do you see?
Fabricio Werdum, I think, is going to get his hand raised at the end of this. I just think he has more ways to win this fight. And, going from a guy like Roy Nelson, who definitely is dangerous, has the knockout power, also has the great jiu-jitsu pedigree as well, too. I just think Fabricio Werdum is on another level. I mean, Travis Brown was a big favorite going into that fight with Werdum, and Werdum completely dominated him. And, it's not the same as going against Roy Nelson as it is with Werdum. Werdum's got great cardio. Werdum's got improved striking. And he's also great on the ground, too. So all really Werdum has to do in this fight is get him to the ground. I don't know why Roy Nelson didn't try and do that, because you obviously know that's the weakness of Hunt. But Fabricio Werdum, he has a very clear path to winning this fight, and that's by submission, and that's why I think he's going to win. Hunt's only chance, really, is to knock out Fabricio Werdum. And the last time Werdum was knocked out was, I believe, Junior Dos Santos, way back when Werdum was in the UFC the first time. So it's a tough task for Mark Hunt. I'm not carrying him out, but if you had to ask me for a pick, I'd pick Werdum.
Well, in a couple of weeks, I'll be interviewing George St. Pierre on stage at the Gentleman's Expo, and we all know what probably the first question I'm going to ask him is, or at least in the first couple of questions, if I do have to throw George a softball, is will he return? Do you think George St. Pierre makes a return to mixed martial arts?
That is the million-dollar question. I'd say it's about a 50% chance. I really do. I think that, you know, obviously he's back to training, but then I read something that he said he just wants to keep in shape and things like that. I think he'll return if the UFC makes the money right. You really have to come back. And I mean, he has a lot to lose, Joe, if he comes back. I mean, you know, a lot of people didn't think he won that fight against Johnny Hendricks. The welterweight division is probably as strong as it's ever been. He's going into a land full of sharks at this point if he comes back. I think he's done enough to prove that he doesn't need to come back. But, you know, the competitor in him probably will bring him back. And if I had to bet right now, I'd say 50% chance I think GSP probably will come back at some point just because the UFC is in need of stars, and I think that they'll really push to get him back.
And I'm going to ask him that very question at the Gentleman's Expo. James, thank you very much. Hopefully I see you there and look forward to running into you very soon.
Definitely. I will be there, and I will check out that. And got to see GSP and, of course, yourself. It's going to be a great event.
There you have it, James Lynch. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Lynch on Sports. All right, thank you very much to James. Thank you very much to Miles Jury taking on Cowboy Cerrone in the co-main event for UFC 182. It's going to be a spectacular fight, a great event, which is headlined by John Bones Jones and Daniel Cormier. That is going to be a spectacular light heavyweight championship fight. And, of course, thanks to Michael Bisping and Luke Rockhold from the conference call earlier this week, and of course Chael Sonnen and George St. Pierre with the podcast that you can check out on podcast, Chael Sonnen's podcast at podcast1.com. It's got an app as well. I've got it on my iPhone. Love listening to Chael Sonnen. Some great stuff there. Special thanks to you, the listeners. You have been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.